Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world, whatever time it is you're tuning in, welcome to Rampton's Radio. Random ramblings recorded at Rampton's Road, although that's quite an inaccurate entry now because I've moved and I now live 50-odd minutes away from Rampton's Road. Womandjaka. How do you pronounce that, Ruben? Is it Womandjaka? Is that right?
Well, Womandjaka works. Womandjaka is another alternative, but they both work, I think.
Well, tell me the correct one.
Well, I've heard Wurundjeri and Bunurong people use both versions. So
okay, all right. Well, in an effort to do better, I've decided I'm now saying that at the beginning of everything I do. So, Womandjaka, everybody, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people, and I'm coming to you, as you may have already guessed, with Ruben Berg. So, for those of you who are friends with me through the Frisbee community, you would know Ruben well. He has been a prominent member of the Frizz scene since long before I was in it. And he actually heads up the rules committee, so he's important in Frisbee Band. Ruben, you're many other things. Do you want to just tell us, you know, give us a 30-second potted history of who you are and what you do?
That would be my pleasure. My name's Ruben Berg. I'm a Gunditjmara man and a father of two. And I have a variety of roles through my strange and bizarre life I've had. So as I said, I'm the chair of the World Flying Disc Federation Ultimate Rules Committee. So I write the rules of Ultimate Frisbee for the world and have done for the last 10 years. I also have a variety of government and non-government appointments. So I'm a commissioner for the Victorian Environmental Waterholder, looking after all the rivers in the state of Victoria, along with my fellow commissioners. I'm a member of the Heritage Council of Victoria, so helping to determine what buildings and what places are of state significance here in Victoria. I'm also a director at Western Port Water down at Phillip Island, so looking after their sewerage and their drinking water and making sure we don't mix the two up. also recently been elected as a member of the First Peoples Assembly of Victoria, so helping lead the treaty process here in Victoria.
Awesome. And your people aren't originally from Victoria, though, is that right? You're a Queensland.
So I lived in Brisbane for quite some time, but I'm actually from Victoria. So okay. Gunditjmara people, we come from Framlingham, from down in Warrnambool, southwestern Victoria.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah, so I grew up in Melbourne all my life and then went to Brisbane for 10 years and then came back again.
Okay, cool. And today, we're not going to talk about anything related to any of your laundry list of appointments.
Not today.
So this whole episode came about, people, because we were at a chili training one day and Ruben said, hey, Cole, I like your podcast. If you want to talk about X, Y, Z or whatever, he listed 10 things off the top of his head at the time. I'd love to chat with you. And I was like, oh, that's a great idea. And given that, as you know, I've done a terrible job of producing this with any regularity at all, I felt like it would be a good idea to reach out to Ruben and make it happen. And I remembered the very first thing he said on his list. He said free will. So I had an idea, Ruben. I thought today we might have a debate about whether or not humans have free will.
Okay.
And the twist that I'm giving it is you get to choose whether you want positive or negative, and I'll debate for the other side.
Ooh, okay. All right. Interesting. I don't know that I have arguments for the side that says that there is free will. So that makes me tempted to be on that side, but I think all I've got in my mind at the moment are ideas of why there clearly is no such thing as free will. So I might take that position.
Okay, awesome. I will argue for the affirmative then, and I will try to argue that we do have free will.
Good luck with it.
All right, Ruben, do you want to have a crack at dismissing the idea that we have free will with whatever series of logic you want to do that?
Well, I mean, I guess first we've got to make sure we're clear about what actually is free will. It's hard to debate something exists or not if you're not really sure what it is.
Good idea.
As we've mentioned, I'm not an expert on these things whatsoever, but I have an interest and have been intrigued by the idea by various podcasts and videos and that sort of stuff. So just speaking from that kind of knowledge I've gleaned, it seems to me that free will is generally described as this idea that in a certain situation, you have the ability to act whichever way you want to. Or another way to look at that is if you went back in time, if you could reverse time of everything we've just done, that and everything else being exactly the same, could you have started this podcast any other way than the way you started it? And if you could, then yeah, we have free will. And if it was, there was no way that you could have done it any other way based on everything else being exactly the same, then there is no free will. And that's
can I add a qualifier to that definition?
Yes.
Yeah, because I think the description of it being exactly the same is risky, because the universe might have a degree of randomness involved in it. So we can have quantum field collapse essentially can happen in random ways. So can I say, can I just adjust the definition to say that rather than that you couldn't have done it any other way, that, I don't know, there's an element of it could have happened differently, but that difference would have been through randomness rather than...
Sure. Well, I guess what I'm saying is that the state of the universe would be exactly the same as it was the first time you did that, including all that randomness.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So essentially you're saying...
I'm not saying that the world, that there's fatalism, that everything is predetermined, because there is that randomness. It's that at a given spot in time, you have no choice of what you're going to do other than what you're going to do.
Okay. And so if that's your belief, why do you think that? Why is it that I don't have the opportunity to make choices of my own?
And I think an important part of this is that it definitely feels like we do.
Right? Yep.
I agree that it feels like we do, but I don't see any reason why we would actually have that choice. Yep. Everything else in the universe is deterministic. It's determined by all the different things that the physics of the world dictates, how the rain's going to fall from the sky and how a ball's going to roll down a hill, or how a frisbee's going to fly is all determined by the physics. And our minds are not some magical thing that's beyond that. Our minds are just a physical thing, and our thoughts are just a state of that mind at a certain time. And so there's no reason why our brains and our thoughts would be any different to be controlled by the physical world in that way.
Yeah. So if you agree that the mind is the function of electrical and chemical activity in your brain, then what you're saying is at no point do I get a decision as to where the electricity is going to go or what chemicals are going to be produced. Is that?
That's right. At a particular point in time, your brain is already wired in a certain way to decide what it is you're about to decide based on all your life experience, everything that's happened to you, the exact context that you're in. That all determines the way that your brain is going to decide what happens.
Yeah, totally. So I like to, so I agree with you, right?
You're doing a bad job, man.
No. I'll get to my slam dunk moment, but I can't reveal it yet. So I agree with you. And I think it's sometimes useful to think of it from the development of a human from the very beginning. So you start off as like literally two cells
that merged 6,000 years ago when the world started, or?
No, I'm talking about in my case, 40 years ago when I was conceived, right? So you begin as two cells. Random mind-blowing fact, if you haven't thought about this ever, you are the product of cell division that has continued unabated for 4 billion years.
Yeah.
Which, that is a mind-blowing thought for me. Anyway, which also puts cancer in perspective. The fact that cells divide a little wildly sometimes is a little more understandable when you realize that you are the product of a process of cell division that hasn't stopped for 4 billion years. The fact that a few of them get confused and overdo it, maybe it's not so unfair.
Yeah.
Anyway, what I was going to say was, so you're a couple of cells, and obviously each of them brings half of your DNA, and you have no influence over that. You have no choice over what DNA you're made of. And then within the womb, obviously you have no choice about the environment you're in or anything like that. And the cell division continues and you become 4 cells and 8 cells, 16 cells, 32 cells, 64 cells, and on you go. And at no point, at that point, could you possibly have any choice? And I think we could all agree that you can get to the moment of birth without really having had any opportunity to choose anything.
Yeah.
Maybe, right? Because you're just a function of the DNA that you were given and the environment that you're in. And then when you get born, and I think most people understand.
But if you're kicking in the womb, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think there is any choice at all, but in terms of there being some sort of choice by that you as an entity, if you're choosing to kick the inside of your mother at that point, is that a choice that you're making?
Yeah, interesting. So I reckon it might be worth, so you decided to define free will. I think it might be interesting to define you.
Ooh, okay.
So I reckon lots of people talk about free will without ever defining what they mean when they say I or me or you or them, like a singular human pronoun of whatever. I'm not a linguist, so I can't tell you what they all mean, but I think you get it. Like when we're describing a human, what is a human? And so I would say if you define a human as everything inside the skin sack.
Yes.
Okay. If you ask, does that whole system, that is the skin sack and everything in it, does it make a choice? I would, and whether it's a baby in the womb or me deciding which microphone to use tonight, I would say, yes, that system got to make a choice. Okay.
I'm happy with that idea, I think.
Okay,
the
cool.
The agent has a choice.
We'd need to define agent for me to agree with that. But
I guess agent to me is the same as saying the thing that fits within the skin sack is it's an agent.
Okay, cool. So, okay, yeah, got it. So what's interesting is because I can say, oh, that's Ruben, and I would point to you. So someone said to me at my wedding, who's that? The guy at the front doing the acknowledgement of country. I said, oh, that's Ruben, right? And I pointed to the skin sack that looks a lot like you. Funnily enough, ship of Theseus style, it's not the same guy anymore, but so I pointed to that and said, oh, that's Ruben. But there might be times, right? So you're now like 41, 42 years old, something like that. Is that right?
40.
Yep. Good. So when you reach our age, things start to go wrong and you might say, oh, my knee is playing up or my body is failing. And when you say my body, there would be no reason to say that if the definition of I or me or you was always the skin sack and everything in it. Because just saying I'm breaking down would be enough. Because if I and the skin sack and everything in it is the same thing, then I wouldn't need to express ownership over my body. So when I say my body, to me, what that seems to infer is that I'm actually not my body. I'm something other than my body, and my body is some sort of possession of the thing that's actually me.
Are you saying that distinct from your thoughts? Because you would say my thoughts as well, potentially, right?
Yeah, totally. And so I actually have a model I draw, which obviously is hard to do in an audio format, but it's essentially concentric circles getting smaller. And the biggest circle is the universe, and that's everything. The next circle down is the world, which it might be better to say your sphere of influence. So it's everything that you can touch. So the moon is not really in my world, although if you work for NASA or you're Elon Musk, then maybe the moon is like right on the periphery. And obviously the lines aren't actually definitive. It's a constant spectrum, but these are useful definitions, I think. And then smaller than the world is your body, which is stuff like your body is a region of the universe you have massive influence over. And then finally, within that, I have a tiny little circle that I call the observer, which is just the thing, the conscious awareness sitting inside the skin sack, seeing everything happening. So the reason I think it's useful to define I or me or whatever is because the definition of free will might vary if you were to define a person as the skin sack and everything in it, or if the person is just the conscious awareness that exists in there as a product of the mind.
I get that. And to me, the thing that jumps out is that I'm not convinced that the consciousness is the thing in the middle. I think that the agent as the skin sack has enabled the creation of the consciousness as kind of a side thing to help the agent function in the world. So I don't think that the you in your mind is the actual core of the agent, the person.
Okay. Now you're walking into my trap. So you just said that the agent created, and I assume by that you mean it through a process of evolution, this thing appeared.
Yes.
To help. What was the exact word you said? We could rewind and say.
But it's something about the agent is the core, the inner core, and there's a in your concentric circles, I think the actual agent is in the middle, and there's this consciousness outside of that that feels like it's running the show, but actually there's this agent within it that really is running the show.
Why did you say the agent had a consciousness? You said it created it for a reason.
It created it to make it easier for that agent to do what it's trying to do.
Perfect.
To survive.
How would that consciousness make it easier? How would that awareness make the agent's actions easier or more effective or more evolutionarily fit?
Sure. So now we're talking about from an evolutionary standpoint, I guess where I'd be coming from, in terms of being able to recognize yourself as a member of a community, as a social being. To be a social being, you have to identify yourself and identify others. And being a social being is obviously going to be beneficial from an evolutionary standpoint. So I think that's where it would stem.
Okay. But I think if you're saying that having an awareness, a consciousness, helps the agent make good choices, make evolutionarily successful choices, somehow that consciousness must be having an influence on the actions of the agent.
I wasn't saying that the consciousness helps it make decisions. The having the idea of consciousness assists the agent, I think, in some way. But I don't know the detailed ins and outs of how that is. But I think to say that the consciousness assists it to make choices, which is the word phrasing you used, is not what I would say.
Okay. It just seems to me... So what's interesting about this debate is you and I believe all the same stuff. And I suspected we might when you even suggested this thing, right? But so if anyone listening to this hasn't listened to any of Sam Harris's introductory stuff or hasn't kind of jumped on YouTube and just Googled free will, essentially the idea is... if you are a system, in a sense, a mechanical system or a wetware system, if you like, where if you're just composed of the universe, the matter of the universe, all of which has mathematical behaviors, most of which we understand, not all of it, then if you are just built up of the Lego building blocks that everything else in the universe is made up of, then your mind isn't some magic thing that somehow manages to influence the universe in ways that the mechanics of the universe wasn't just going to do itself. And so I think the bit that we're actually teasing out here, Ruben, I think, is the bit where we say, is consciousness just along for the ride? Or could it have any influence whatsoever on the actions or behavior of the meat robot that is a human being or any other potentially conscious being? And so... the reason I was willing to say I'll argue either side, right, is because I totally agree with the idea that you can't influence how an electron flows through your brain or what chemical gets produced and how that reacts. Like, we have no influence over any of that stuff. But if you could make, in theory, a human that was exactly like a normal human in every way except they're a zombie. Mm-hmm. So they spoke like a normal human. They were smart, like they were intelligent in the way that a computer is intelligent, but they could be as intelligent as a human. They could do everything that a human does, moves the way the human does, and the only thing was that they weren't conscious, right? So you could have a zombie Reuben or a zombie Cole.
Yeah, I'm struggling to imagine. I can't quite imagine that. That what to be human without being conscious.
What's the name of that sci-fi show where they make a bunch of AI, essentially cyborg human things, and the technology is perfected to the point where they look and sound and act and behave
Westworld?
Exactly like humans? But Westworld.
Yeah, I've never seen it, but yeah.
Neither have I.
We should do a podcast about it.
Perfect. We've done all the required study. So, like with a show like that or a concept like that, that demonstrates the idea that you could make something which was capable of passing a physical Turing test. Like, you could be there talking to it and unaware that it's not a human, but isn't conscious, at least not the way we understand each other to be conscious.
But maybe, right? maybe it would be a different sort of conscious then, yes.
Yeah, maybe. So my question is then, and the reason why I'm choosing to argue that we do have free will, or at least what I'm arguing is maybe consciousness influences the physical universe somehow.
I think the idea that consciousness could influence the agent, I think I'm open to that idea. I think that's
okay.
That intrigues me. The idea.
Tell me how could it influence it? What could it be doing?
Well, but it could help. It could help the agent to make decisions by filtering things through the consciousness. But the consciousness isn't the one that's going to decide what to do with that. It would be the agent deciding what it's going to do with how the consciousness had filtered stuff through it. How it could influence it. But the consciousness isn't going to decide to do it a certain way.
When you're saying it's being filtered through the consciousness, unless you're saying that the mind happens outside of the physical universe, isn't that just another physical process in a brain and that could happen without consciousness?
I guess what I'm trying to say is that the subconscious, which controls most of what we do as an agent.
Yeah.
That can see what's going on with the consciousness, can understand what the consciousness is doing, its thoughts, and use that to influence the decisions it's going to make as that subconscious. But the conscious is the thing that we feel is us, the consciousness,
yeah,
going to be able to decide how it's going to be used in that way. So it could influence.
But if any information is coming from the consciousness, doesn't that have to be by definition some kind of physical process happening in the universe?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the reason why I think if we don't have free will, then we might at least have some influence over the course of our actions is the fact that the word consciousness exists. Mm-hmm. Because one way that I think is useful to think about a human, and this is especially so for people who either have massive anxiety or low self-esteem or lots and lots and lots of depressive type, like anything where there's a lot of negative self-talk, I think it's really useful to say to yourself, you're not your thoughts. You're actually just awareness sitting inside a meat robot, and you didn't get any choice what meat robot you got. You don't get any choice what that meat robot thinks. And if you can just create enough space between you and the ideas that are bouncing around in that head that you happen to be getting a front row seat to the show of, if you can just realize that that was just blind luck that you got a front row seat to a show with quite a lot of negative self-talk, then you can stop kind of absorbing so much of that self-talk. And so sometimes I reckon it's worth saying, you are not your thoughts. You're not your meat robot. You're just the awareness inside. Right? You are aware of everything that's happening in your head, but you aren't all of it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I guess the way I like to, a similar idea is that you actually experience your thoughts rather than you actually have thoughts.
Yes.
That's another way of looking at it. Yeah.
Totally. So if you are aware of your thoughts, right?
This is the you, the conscious you,
yep. The consciousness, the awareness, right?
Yeah.
If you're aware of your thoughts, it seems to me that your thoughts are aware of you.
Yeah.
My meat robot seems to know that there's a consciousness along for the ride here.
That makes
sense. It seems to care what the consciousness experiences.
I think I'd agree with that. Yep.
Why? What the fuck?
It's a weird way to have created a mind to do it in that way. But I mean, it seems to have worked in terms of that we exist and have done all this stuff. And I think as you're kind of framing it, the interesting thing when you do think about this whole idea of free will, if you don't have it, then as you say, what can you do to actually influence how your brain works?
Yep.
And you've spoken about the idea of being able to use kind of self-talk to do that. And when I was going through first learning about all this stuff, I realized that consciously or not, that the most influence you can probably get is from outside of yourself. Mm-hmm. You're able to expose yourself to as much different thought that can come into your brain to impact the way that it can receive and understand what's going on and to decide things. The more positive things you can expose yourself to, the more likely it is that your brain will decide to do positive, good things.
Yeah, totally.
But then you have to make a conscious choice to expose yourself to those things.
So there's a few different models of the brain. And I want to make it clear that all of these are models rather than reality. Like anyone who claims to understand how the brain works is totally lying. I saw a thing on Twitter a little while ago that said, where we are at neuroscience is like pointing a laser thermometer at a computer and saying, oh, that bit gets hot when you give it mathematics. Like, we just have no clue what's going on.
Yeah.
And so...
understandably, that a brain is trying to understand itself.
Like, yeah. Maybe by definition, that's not possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. But there's a few models that I see some parallels between. So the first is, have you read Thinking Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman?
Some of them,
right, yeah. So... by the way, sometimes I'm going to explain some things which you and I both understand because, you know, other people might be listening. So Thinking Fast and Slow says there are two systems. System one thinks quickly and it happens automatically. And it's the system that gives you the answer to 2 + 2 = 4 instantly. It's the system that perks your ears up every time you hear the word Reuben in a crowded room. It's the thing that just constantly works and reminds you that you left the iron on an hour after you've left the house, that kind of thing. And then system two is your slow thinking brain. And it does things like what's 64 times 132 and stuff like that. And I notice there's a whole bunch of different mental models. So the other one is people talk about the default mode network and the executive network. And I see some real similarities between that and system one and system two. People talk about the subconscious and the conscious. I see some real similarities between that and system one and system two. People talk about the monkey mind and the monkey and the monk in a sense. And again, it essentially feels to me like in a very basic level, you can divide your brain into roughly two things, not physically, but conceptually. One of which is ludicrous processing power that you have absolutely no control over. And the other one is incredible faculties of logic, which happens really slowly and which you do seemingly have control over, right? It feels to me like, and I know that feeling and reality aren't the same thing, to be clear, but it feels to me like if your consciousness can have any influence on the way your brain operates, it's through that system too, the slow thinking executive function. Like, it feels like maybe we're able to do something there that then affects how your system one works in the long term. And so I think the one you're saying is go and expose yourself to, you know, positive environments or positive whatever, and then slowly that'll turn the tide on the way your subconscious monkey mind system one brain is operating. Is that any of that makes sense?
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And that's, I mean, because it is really troubling when you realize that you don't have free will and like that you just have no... you're not in control of the things that you do, despite it feeling that way. And so I think you do need to have, like you've said, some way of feeling like you can still influence that. Because I think influence is probably the right word to use in terms of influencing that subconscious that you...
So when you came to the conclusion that you don't have free will, why didn't you immediately turn into a nihilist?
Wow. Did I? No. I think that, you know, just despite it being an illusion, consciousness is still enjoyable to have an experience, and there is still pleasure in the world despite you not having any choice about things. And I think that's what's intriguing to me about the idea as well. To me, I'm about just trying to experience as many positive things as I can and make things... just get the most, what's the correct word? I'm trying to find the right term here for it. Like pleasure, essentially. I just like trying to get as much pleasure out of everything I can. And I think that's not diminished by not having free will. I can still experience pleasure in the things that I do. And there are ways of going about living your life that enable you to have more sustainable pleasure than otherwise.
Yeah. I just had an idea. I've never said this out loud before, so it might be really stupid, but I'll give it a crack and you can tell me. So, because sometimes people say, oh, well, if you don't believe in free will, why bother doing it? Like, why bother doing anything? It makes no difference. It's all determined anyway. And I think I've just realized the reason might be this. The two definitions. So the first definition of you is everything in the meat sack. You called it the agent. So we're saying the human body and everything in it. And the second definition is just this observer awareness, I like the bit you said before, how that's not actually in the middle, but that's probably the topic for another podcast. We'll get there later. For many people, it probably feels like it's in the middle. It does for me most of the time. But that's the other definition of you. So what I think we're saying is the observer you doesn't have free will. You and I agree about that. And I think we agreed right at the start that the whole system, the skin sack you, sort of does, in the sense that it's a large, complicated computer whose decision-making circuits do make decisions constantly. And it, in a sense, has something resembling free will, because its thought process itself is part of the preconditions that decide how it makes decisions. So it believing that it has free will is actually useful for it, even if it's not true.
Yeah, and I guess I would just, and I've heard it described otherwise similar, is I would say that the agent has will in that it can choose between things, but the choice it has to make is not necessarily a free choice.
Yeah.
And that it's still determined by the laws of the universe.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let me ask you a question. Can we give the meat sack version of you a name? Like, there's the observer and the agent. Okay, there's the agent and there's the observer. Yeah. If consciousness had no influence on the agent, why would the agent ever meditate? Because the agent is the thing that decides to sit down. The agent is the thing that decides to focus on the breath. The agent is the thing that does everything physical in the universe. Why would it decide to meditate if it wasn't A, aware of consciousness, and B, in my mind, by definition, is influenced by consciousness, because if consciousness didn't exist, meditation wouldn't either. Because the point of meditation is to create space for consciousness to observe.
Yeah, I mean, I think I definitely agree with this idea, and I hadn't thought of it until we've had this conversation, that the observer can definitely influence the agent in those ways that you're saying. But when you talk about the question of why does it do that, there's not necessarily a good logical reason. The agent doesn't necessarily have to be acting in a logical, reasonable way either.
No, yeah. We all like to think that we treat ourselves like economists treat us, like we're always going to be logical, but in fact, there's no reason we should be. We can do irrational shit all the time.
Most of the time, we're not. Like, it's pretty clear that we're not most of the time.
Yeah. Okay, I want to steer this in a slightly new course, if you like. This is an idea that I've been playing with recently. And are you familiar with the term panpsychism?
No.
Okay, it's a terrible name, but essentially panpsychism is the guess that the universe has consciousness kind of woven through it, and that everything... essentially that consciousness might be a fundamental property of the universe, just like gravity is, as an example. Wow. And so the idea says basically, if you start as two cells and then slowly build up from there, consciousness never seems to, like, I don't think we think of consciousness as flicking on like a switch. Like, it's kind of, I don't know about you, but I look at animals of various complexities and I think of them as varyingly conscious. Is that your sense?
Yeah, I guess so. And this is all through the idea that consciousness is actually a real thing too.
No, but consciousness is the only thing we can be sure is real. Consciousness is the only thing you can know for an absolute certain fact is real.
Well, depends. Well, the sense that we... that there is something within our brain, like this again, like it's hard to distinguish consciousness from the non-meat sack part of it, the you.
Yeah.
Right. So like that we have thoughts is definitely true, but that we feel like that we're some sort of you within that. That's the bit that I think is an illusion. There isn't that. Consciousness might not be anything particular at all. It's just a weird kind of chemical little thing that makes us feel a certain way, but it's not.
I think of consciousness as a mathematical wave function. And so the best metaphor for it is probably an actual wave. So if you have a body of water, okay, the thing is water, lots of it. And then a wave appears in it, and the water moves in such a way as to create a wave. And us as humans, we look at that and go, oh, that's a wave.
Yep. The wave is not an actual physical thing. Yep.
No, the wave is
an arrangement of the water molecules.
Exactly. So, and so where a wave in water is an arrangement of the thermodynamic energy or whatever in water molecules, I suspect if consciousness is a property of the universe, then humans are an example of a wave established by this collection of atoms which are hanging around together doing this amazing shit.
But is that suggesting that even without, like, humans and intelligent creatures that have consciousness, that there is still consciousness out there in the universe?
Well, in the same way that temperature, there are really hot things like the sun, which is like 5 million degrees or something. And then there's something that's minus 273.1315 degrees, which is absolute zero. At absolute zero, there's no energy sitting in an atom making it vibrate. And at any amount, if any amount of energy above that, then it records a temperature. Possibly consciousness is the same, and it's something to do with complexity or information exchange or something like that, where you could have something fairly non-complex like a cockroach, for example, where there's a bit of information exchange, there's a bit of interaction, quite a lot compared to a rock, and that might be a bit conscious in the same way that my phone is a little bit warm, right? But there's nowhere near as much interactivity as there is in a human, which is then quite a lot conscious. But then, I mean, we could find some other intelligence somewhere else in the universe that was...
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely imagine this idea that there's certain ways of putting together a brain that doesn't enable that wave to form.
Mm, yeah, yes. Well, there is, because when you die, we'll be looking at it.
Sure.
Because you could be this now and then have like a heart attack and I could watch you die right here on Zoom. Right. And then I would see all the... Yeah, Ruben's just done, you know, the tongue out reenactment of a sudden. Yeah. Anyway, the arrangement of atoms in you would be almost identical as it was a moment before. And yet now it's not a wave. It's just a still pool of water. And so the point that you were making, which is that the difficulty of identifying exactly what you, the observer you, is because it's not actually an observer. It's the experience itself, I think, is what we are. In the same way that the wave is not the water, it's not a thing. The wave is the pattern that emerges. And because we live in such a three-dimensional world and deal with things in such a three-dimensional way, I think we find it very difficult to realize that whatever it is that we actually are doesn't exist in three-dimensional space at all.
Mm. Yeah, and that makes it hard to grapple with, especially when you're within that thing.
Yes.
Understand, like a water molecule in a wave, trying to understand what a wave is would be challenging in itself. But
yeah,
we are the brain, experiencing the brain, trying to understand what the brain is.
It's paradoxical as.
Yeah.
Okay, Ruben, what is the... I'm quite interested by what's true, but I'm also quite interested by what's useful. Mm. So we've been having a debate about what's true. And just before we go, I think it'd be interesting if you could share for anyone listening, what's useful for you in all of this? How does understanding or exploring this concept provide utility or whatever in your life? What's useful about this for you?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that are useful about it. And one is, you know, just being able to, when you're looking at behaviors in others, to not necessarily be so judging of others in terms of their behavior, because essentially people are just determined by their upbringing, by the society they're a part of. They haven't necessarily chosen to be a good or bad person. We can have a whole nother debate about what is good and what is bad, but people's behavior isn't something they've necessarily chosen. And so we shouldn't be so harsh on people in terms of that. And I think that's an important understanding to have from understanding the lack of free will. And also then to just be able to realize at times that you are just experiencing your thoughts. I think that can be a powerful sense to have within yourself, that you are just experiencing your thoughts and that you don't have to be judgmental about them either. Yeah. So, and then the other one is, as I said before, is thinking about if you don't have any choice about anything, but you feel like you can influence your conscious, your subconscious, what are the positive things you can be trying to influence it with so that you can have, you know, the most positive experiences out there?
Yeah. What I hear you saying there, I think, is that it's a tool for increasing the amount of compassion that you have both for the people around you and yourself. It's much easier to be compassionate to another person if you can understand that they couldn't have acted another way. They are a function of their DNA and the environment they grew up in and the ideas they were exposed to, and it's not their fault. Playing that game on the hardest level possible is being compassionate to Donald Trump. So can you watch an absolutely malignant narcissist shit all over the entire world and understand that it's not his fault? He got born with a fucked up set of DNA code in a loveless family and is a scared little child and he knows no other way.
Yeah, and shouldn't have been put in this role in the first place. It's not his fault that people were silly enough to have voted him in. And I think it's not that hard to make that stretch. It's something that I don't do often enough, but I think that's the extent we need to go to understand that. That doesn't mean that we can't do things to limit the damage that he might be able to do
and totally
make a change in that area. But I think, you know, you can have that compassion still for the situation he's in as well.
Yeah. So the last thing I'd say about it for anyone who has found this useful is I think understanding that you don't have free will is the strongest logical way of creating massive compassion for yourself. And so I think most people have an inner dialogue, and I really do mean most people. I reckon most people have an inner dialogue that talks to and at themselves in a way which, if they were to say it out loud about other people, we would physically shut them up. Like, we would say things like, how dare you talk to my friend like that? But the voice we hear the most and that we're closest to talks to us like in an abusive manner much of the time, I reckon, for most people most of the time. And if you can realize that that voice isn't you and that that voice couldn't have done anything else in that moment, then you can be way more compassionate to it. Mm. And there's a paradox here where I think you also have to combine this kind of unlimited compassion with almost unlimited resolve to be better in the future. Like I try with myself to be unlimitedly compassionate to myself in reflection. Even if the dickhead moment was 1 second ago, I try to be as compassionate as possible. And I have almost unlimited resolve that I'm going to be better in the next second or tomorrow or next week or whatever. Like, looking to the future, I essentially, even though I don't believe that I really have free will, I choose to believe that I do, because I'm going to influence what my future looks like. And it's only when I'm looking at things in reflection do I say, well, you were just that collection of atoms put in that environment. How could you have acted any other way?
Yeah, no, I think that's the best way to go about it.
Ruben, it's been fun. There's very about fun. 18 other topics that we could dive into. So maybe we'll reconvene at a later date and travel down one of the rabbit holes opened up tonight.
Sounds fantastic.
Ruben Berg, thanks for hanging out. I'll see you soon.
Thanks, Cole. See ya.